Chances are you've bumped around in the dark, right? We all bump around in the dark at some point at night. Maybe you're at stumbling into the kitchen for a snack or going to the bathroom. But don't you wonder why as you're feeling the walls with your hands that there are some animals that are able to see in the dark and that they only come out at night? You got your jaguars and your possums and that raccoon making a racket out there in the garbage cans. They have some mysterious ability to see clearly using very few photons of light. How do they do it? So far, scientists have been pretty much in the dark about seeing in the dark, but research published in this week's journal Cell shows a startling discovery that scientists made about how the eyes of these nocturnal animals operate. Our next guest is someone who helped discover a key clue about night vision. He's here to talk about this with us right now. Johan Gook is a lecturer in the physics department, University of Cambridge in UK. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Gook.
Good afternoon.
First of all, how do we see? What happens in our eyes?
Well, I think the basic function of the eye is that there's a lens in front of it,
right,
that images whatever is on the outside onto the back of the eye. And basically lining the back of the eye is a very thin tissue, which is called the retina. Mm-hmm. And in that retina, there are cells that convert light into electrical signals that then are sent on through the optic nerve to the brain where we process that.
Mm-hmm. And what's different about nocturnal animals? Why can they see better than we can?
Right. What we found now is that there is some very striking change in the nuclear architecture of some of the cells that are residing within the retina. I think to understand that a bit better, we need to take a step back again. The strange thing about the retina is that it's inverted. The photoreceptor cells that I just mentioned, which are there to receive the light, are actually not on top of the retina where you would expect them, so close to the lens, but they're actually on the far side, which means that all the light has to propagate through the entire retina before it can be received by the photoreceptor cells, which seems to be a very strange arrangement, because that means that any image that you project onto the retina can potentially be scattered, distorted, and the image quality deteriorates. And that's been a puzzle for a very long time, because why the retina is inverted and why we still see clear images. I mean, that situation amounts to putting a thin diffusing screen in front of your photographic film or CCD chip in your camera and then expecting that you get clean images.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the general problem that nature has to deal with in this situation. So what we published a few years back actually was that there are some cells in the retina, so-called Müller glial cells, which are long, cylindrical, and have a higher refractive index, and they work just like optical fibers that are used for telecommunications, for example, that kind of channel the light almost all the way down through the retina.
Like very a tube. They go like on a tube then to the back of the retina.
Say again?
They go like on a tube.
Yes, exactly.
To the back of the retina. Yeah.
That would be a very extreme situation. I think it's not as black and white, but they help to get the light basically almost all the way down through the retina to the photoreceptor cells. Mm-hmm. And that seems to take care of most of the problem, especially in diurnal animals, such as ourselves. The nocturnal animals are different because they want to see at very low light levels, which means they need to have a very high sensitivity. And they do that by having a lot of rod photoreceptor cells, so many of them, which means that there are also many nuclei to these photoreceptor cells, and these nuclei pile up basically in the last third of the retina. So the light gets through these cells that I just mentioned, about two-thirds down, and then the light still has to go through these nuclei, and they can potentially scatter the light and deteriorate the image. So what we found now is that there's a very specific adaptation of these nuclei to get the light all the way down to the photoreceptor cells.
And what is the adaptation?
Well, that's actually a very crazy story, because nuclei, in a biological context, are mostly thought of as the place where you have DNA, where transcription takes place, where the genetic code is stored and then read out and then passed on to the rest of the cell.
Right.
And there's a lot of DNA there. It's about 2 meters if you stretch out the DNA that is contained in a single nucleus. So it's a very difficult problem actually to get all that long DNA stretch into the nucleus, and they just solve that problem by coiling that DNA up and wrapping it around histones and so forth to create different territories actually within the nucleus. Mm. So there's very, very densely packed chromatin, which is called heterochromatin, that is not used. There's nothing read out, so you can kind of safely store that away. That heterochromatin is usually found at the perimeter of, or the periphery of the nucleus, whereas the euchromatin, just the other kind of chromatin that is more accessible, less densely packed, that still provides access for molecules to get in there and do the transcription into RNA, that is found in the center.
So the nocturnal animals have found a way of using this DNA to magnify the light that's coming in.
That is correct, yes.
And that's different than what we do.
That is different than...
You know, we always think, as you say, we always think of DNA as just being the genetic blueprint as a chemical object, but this is the DNA is actually acting like a physical conduit.
Not the individual molecule itself.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you have a lot of it.
Right.
And it's very differently distributed within the nucleus.
Well, this is more like a physics problem than a biology problem.
That's exactly right, and that's the reason why we as physicists are actually involved in this particular study.
So you physicists had to tell a biologist how to look at their eyes?
One way of looking at it, I guess, yes.
Uh-huh. So you how did you as a physicist get to be involved with the biologist?
Well, exactly because of that there was basically the need to interpret the data that our colleagues in Munich and Frankfurt had found a little bit differently than what a biologist would normally do. So the group of Thomas Kriver in Munich, they've kind of pioneered this idea that different chromosome territories within the nuclei.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to look at mouse because mouse is a convenient animal to use, and they looked at the retina because there are these layers that I've been talking about, and there are many of the nuclei, and they just wanted to see what's going on within these nuclei. And they found that in this particular type of nuclei, in the rod photoreceptor cells, the chromatin structure that I've just described, with the heterochromatin on the outside and the euchromatin on the inside, is completely turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
The euchromatin is suddenly on the outside, and the heterochromatin is on the inside.
Did you have a meeting where you happened to bump into the biologist and say, "Hey, we can solve that problem for you"?
That is exactly what happened. Yes.
So you have like a physicist saying, "You know, this is a physics problem. We can tell you how they can see it. You're looking at the DNA and the genetic material the wrong way."
Not quite. I think we had some colleagues that we had published this previous study that knew our new co-authors now in this study. And when they basically were talking, they said, "Well, we've just had a similar problem with these cells that happen to be optical fibers," which is, again, something very crazy, that a cell is actually not just a cell, but acts like an optical fiber, like an artificial structure. So this colleague brought us together and said, "Well, the two of you should talk and kind of maybe you can figure out what's going on here."
Don't you think there should be more cross-fertilization this way between?
I think so. That's absolutely right.
Between the scientists, you know, we hear it all the time. One kind of scientist, happens to bump into another at a party or at the coffee pot or at the water cooler and says, "Hey, you got a problem? I think I got an answer for it."
Right. I think you're absolutely right. I think that should happen more often.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be in a place where that actually does happen quite a bit. Cambridge is a small university compared to others, and there's a lot of mixing going on and interaction of that type to actually also have very crazy ideas. I mean, in a sense, the idea that, or the structure of DNA was also solved by physicists in the Cavendish here in Cambridge, which then influenced completely how biology is done today, right? So the molecular biology, that's the current state of the art in biology, was also founded by physicists. And I think there's some culture here in Cambridge, certainly, where this kind of cross-fertilization is happening.
Wow, so that's poetic justice going on there in Cambridge.
Right.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gook, for talking to us.
Thank you for your interest.
You're welcome. Johan Gook is a lecturer in the physics department at the University of Cambridge in the UK, talking about how physicists were able to help out biologists with a problem they had. And we hear this all the time, that once you get the two sides talking around the coffee machine or whatever, like they did in Cambridge, somebody says, "Hey, you know, did you ever try this idea? That might work." Happened in this case. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk with Mike Schuster, who's going to join us, talking about ballistic missiles, a North Korean ICBM test, see what happened there, what kind of ramifications does it have. Do we have need, and what is the state of our anti-missile systems? So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News.